Hello and welcome to Unity Presbyterian Church Online. This week in worship, Pastor David takes a look at Jesus' encounter with the woman at the well and what it means to gain living water. Let's listen.
I want to show you guys a picture, and it's a picture of a group of us in high school. We went on a trip to Mexico each and every summer. And this is not all from our church. No, our group was about the size of 20, but this is students from all over the United States that gathered for 1 week each summer in Mexico for a mission trip. And there's a couple things I want you to notice about this picture. The first is look at the tents off to the right side. That's where we stayed. Yeah. We went tent camping for the whole week, which meant all of those students, their youth groups, had to get there early, bring their tents with them, bring their sleeping bags with them, and then create their tent and you know, make that their dwelling place for the week, which meant that every student was very sore the next day and really the entire week because you were laying on the ground, you were kind of dusty and dirty, but, I mean, that's all about part of being on a mission trip, right? And then the second thing I want you to notice about this picture is something you can't actually see, but it's that everybody smelled. Everybody. Because there were no showers on site. And so we got two showers the entire week. You had to drive into town and pay to take a shower, which meant that not only were you sore and dusty and smelly and kind of dirty, but the entire group of you were. And so you kind of smelled one another and thought, oh, what are we doing here this week? But what was fascinating to me was that to a person, when you asked them what was the most meaningful thing you did this summer, they all pointed to that trip. Every single one of those youth pointed to that trip. And it made me think that there are times in your life where you are physically exhausted, and yet spiritually you're alive. And that was true for these students, where physically you couldn't have been more kind of pushed outside your comfort zone, but something within them was just alive because they found meaning in the work that they did that week in Mexico. And upon reflection of that week, that's what I think it's really all about, is where in your life, no matter how physically tired you are, where do you find that sense of feeling alive? And usually, it's by doing work that has meaning, purpose, that you see the results of, where you can say, this is why I'm doing this work. This work is making a difference. And so we felt that those summers in Mexico. But what would it be for you? What are those times in your life where, yeah, you might be physically exhausted, but you're spiritually alive? What sort of work do you do where you feel like this work has meaning? This gives me purpose in my life. It could be when you had a newborn child and you got zero sleep, and yet your heart was so full. You know, we all have different experiences, those times where the work that you're engaged in really mattered, and you knew that it mattered. Well, as I said earlier, we're in week two of our encounter series, and we're studying a variety of people that had encounters with Jesus, and then what those encounters did to shape and change them. And today, we're going to study a story of a woman. And the woman had an encounter with Christ, and she learns this spiritual truth. She learns that many things promise fulfillment, but only one thing actually satisfies. And that's what I hope you learn by the end of this sermon as well, through this encounter of Jesus with this woman, that there are many things in this world and in this life that will promise to fulfill you, to give you that meaning, to give you that purpose. But there's only one thing that actually follows through and delivers on that promise. So our story begins with Jesus traveling. Jesus had just traveled from Galilee and spent time in Judea, and now he is traveling back from Judea to Galilee. We pick up our story in John chapter 4. Verse 3 says this: Jesus left Judea and went back once more to Galilee, but he had to go through Samaria. Okay, so this journey from Judea to Galilee generally took 2 to 3 days of walking if you walked the direct route. The only problem with walking the direct route was that you had to go through Samaria. Do you see how John, the author of this gospel, kind of put that? And imagine the tone that maybe he used with that. Of yes, okay, Jesus is traveling, but he had to go through Samaria. The issue. Why? And it's not just John, but most Jews in this time period, when they're traveling, they did not want to have to travel through Samaria. Why? Well, it's very simple, actually. That's where the Samaritans were. And they didn't want to be anywhere near the Samaritans. Yes, the Samaritans lived in Samaria. And the Jews and the Samaritans had a long history of animosity and dispute amongst themselves. In fact, that history goes back to the Old Testament. You might remember where the nation of Israel actually splits into two at one point. And the northern part of Israel, they end up becoming the Samaritans. And the southern part of Israel, the Israelites, end up becoming the Jewish people. And so those groups who used to be one ended up becoming separate. And over generations, they grew further and further apart from one another. Their cultures changed. The way they viewed God changed. And yet they had this history of being together, but now they were so different. And so what grew between these two groups of people were simply hatred and animosity. Yes, Jesus had to go through Samaria. The next verse, we're told that Jesus, he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. That's in the story of Genesis. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was about noon. I want you to notice that Jesus is tired. This is a very human emotion that Jesus is feeling. His journey has been a long one. He's been walking all day. He's tired. He gets into this town, and he sees in the Samaritan town of Sychar a well. This is a picture of a well in this actual region of the Middle East to give you a picture of what it might look like. I hope that this picture helps you imagine Jesus, tired, probably thirsty, probably hungry, sitting down by a well in this Samaritan village that you know he's not going to be welcomed into. This all happens when, in the next verse it says, when a Samaritan woman came to draw water. And Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" His disciples had gone into town to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "Well, you are a Jew, and I am a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? For Jews do not associate with Samaritans." Do you want to know the literal translation of that last sentence? "For Jews do not use dishes that Samaritans have used." That shows you the extent of the suspicion and animosity between these two groups of people. And so a couple of shocking things have happened in this initial encounter. First, the fact that Jesus is even engaging with a Samaritan woman in conversation would have been highly out of the ordinary. And then the fact that he's doing so alone. The disciples have gone into town to buy food would have been even more so. And then the fact that Jesus asked her for a drink. He's willing to share a common cup. That shatters so many social norms between these groups of people in the time that Jesus lived. And this woman does not know what to do with Jesus' request. I mean, she looks at him, probably just shocked by all this, and says, "How? How can you ask me for a drink?" Well, Jesus answered her, if you knew the gift of God and who it is that asked you for a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water. So Jesus is reversing the statement here, reversing the statement that this woman just made. Because the woman says, I know who you are. You're a Jew. And so how can you ask me for a drink? And Jesus reverses that and says, no, if you really knew who I was, then you would have asked me for a drink. You see, what Jesus is doing is he's moving the conversation past and beyond the history of hate and prejudice that these two groups had for each other. And the conversation, moving past that, is now focused only on one thing. It's focused solely on the identity of Jesus. Jesus saying, if you knew who I was, that's what truly matters. Not that I'm a Jew and you're a Samaritan, but if you knew who I was. All that matters now is the identity of Jesus. Not that he's a Jew, not that she's a Samaritan, and not that the groups that they've come from have such hatred for each other, but Jesus saying, if you knew who I was. And he says, not only that, but if you really knew, well, you would have asked me for a drink, and I would have given you one. But the drink I would have given you is different from what you'd expect. Now, the difference is that the water that I would give you is called living water. But Jesus doesn't yet explain what living water is. No, we'll have to go a little bit deeper in the story for that. So the woman responds. She says, sir, the woman said, you have nothing to draw water with, and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did also his sons and his livestock? And Jesus answered, everyone who drinks this water, and I imagine him pointing to the well at that moment, everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. I want you to imagine a time in your life where you were exceedingly thirsty. Imagine a time in your life where your throat was dry. Maybe you'd been on a long run on a hot summer day. Or maybe you can picture hiking through a desert and you're sweating and dusty and thirsty, but there is no water to find. You imagine that moment and how much you were desiring a drink. And then I want you to picture what that drink would look like. Picture that water in your mind. And picture what it feels like when you take that first cool, refreshing sip. And when that cool, refreshing water then coats your dry throat, and all of a sudden, you feel that your thirst is quenched. All of a sudden, you feel satisfied. That yes, you have had the water that you have needed, and you feel fulfilled. I bet you can imagine that, can't you? Because you've had that experience before. You've had times where you're really, really thirsty. And then you get that drink and you feel fulfilled. But there's only one problem with that. Your thirst always comes back. Which means that the fulfillment you feel when drinking that water is a temporary fulfillment. Every day you need more water. Every day you need to continue to drink to satisfy that longing, that quench that thirst. I mean, the woman by the well, she probably came to that well every day, filled up her bucket, and then did her long walk, her journey back to her village, only to do the whole thing over the next day. Because the water that Jesus was pointing to in that well, that can fulfill you, but only on a temporary basis. Jesus is offering something different. Jesus is offering what he calls living water. He says it's different from the water in this well or the water in this cup. What is living water? here's how I would define it. Living water is water that will permanently quench your thirst. See, Jesus says in living water, you drink this water and you will never be thirsty again. Now, we're not really talking about water, are we? No, that's not what this is about. I mean, Jesus is sitting at a well, and he uses that as an illustration. Because, I mean, it's right there. The woman was needing water. Jesus himself was thirsty. But all of this talk about water is just an illustration for something deeper, something more meaningful, something more spiritual. Yeah, we're not really talking about water. What are we talking about? Well, I argue that Jesus is talking about that part of you deep inside that longs for meaning, for purpose, for fulfillment. We all have that, don't we? I mean, you can think and identify with that part of your life where you just it yearns for something real, something more, where you want to use the life that you have to make a real difference in the world, where you recognize that your life is a gift and you don't want to waste it. Yes, inside of us, when we really are able to sit back and get a glimpse of it, we recognize that we yearn for real meaning. We yearn for real purpose. And what we're learning from this story is that there's only one source that can give us lasting fulfillment in that yearning and that longing, and that's from Jesus Christ. We often go to the world and the things in the world to say, well, maybe these things can fill that void that I feel, or satisfy that yearning or fulfillment that I feel, and it can work, at least temporarily. And that's what Jesus is trying to show here, is that things like water or whatever you would put into that statement will work temporarily. But the only thing that can actually give you a lasting sense of purpose and meaning is from Christ. It comes deeper than that. We try a number of different things to fill that longing. We might say, well, if I just find the right relationship, if I find the right relationship, then I will feel truly satisfied. Or if I find the right job, if I get the right career track, then I will be happy. Or if I find the right circle of friends, the right hobbies, the way to fill my time, then I will feel satisfied. And all of these things are good. We need all of them. But we must recognize that the benefits we get from all of these things are temporary. There's only one thing that can eternally fulfill those deepest longings within us. Yes, what Jesus is trying to say here, using water as an illustration, is that there's nothing that can permanently quench that need inside of you outside of God. Yes, God alone can provide the meaning that we desire. And that's why Jesus offers living water. Unity's book club recently finished Dostoevsky's The Idiot, and it was a fantastic book. What's really interesting in it is Dostoevsky, he said it was one of the hardest books he ever wrote, because the protagonist, the main character, he was attempting to write as a Christ-like person. And he had a very hard time writing what he called a most beautiful person in a world that's much like ours. It's not a perfect or not always a beautiful world. And so the whole thrust of the story is, how does this Christ-like character engage in this un-Christ-like world? And you can tell from the title of the book, the world just referred to him as the idiot. Like, oh, he does things so differently, but he's not like us. What's most interesting, though, is that Dostoevsky introduces all sorts of different characters, and all of the characters are searching for meaning. All of the characters want a deeper sense of purpose in their lives, and they find that, at least temporarily, in very different ways. So, for example, one individual, his name was Ganya, and he was willing to sacrifice others in his pursuit of wealth, in his pursuit of reputation. He very much wanted to be in the upper crust of Russian society. And so he sacrificed others to get there, but found even when he got there, well, he still had that sense of longing. It did not satisfy him, at least permanently. There's another character, Lebedev. Now, Lebedev, he didn't really need a whole lot of money, not like Ganya. He just wanted enough so that every night he could buy a drink and fulfill his physical cravings. But he found that even when his physical cravings were fulfilled, well, the next day it had to start all over again. Yes, it was not permanently satisfying. There's another character named Natasha. And Natasha came from a very, very tragic background and upbringing, one that anyone would look at and feel sorry for this person. But then as she grew into an adult, she engaged in self-destructive relationships, because even in those relationships, at least she had some sense of control. And so she sought relationships that she could control, even though they were not healthy for her. And those relationships and that sense of control, they never provided her that sort of longing or satisfaction that she needed. Yes, every character was searching for meaning in their lives, but none of them are finding it, because they seek it to fill that void in their lives with things that were never meant to be permanently satisfying. So it's only Mishkin, who's that Christ-like character. He is able to find purpose in his life. And where does he find it? Mishkin realizes that it is not he who lives, not really, but it is Christ living through him. And because of that, he can find his inner fulfillment and contentment from Christ. And he does not then need anything out in the world to serve that purpose for him. Because ultimately, nothing else can. He recognizes that it is only God and God's source of presence from within him that can then really be that living water that he needs. And so because of that, because he's able to dig deep within himself and tap into God's presence within him, he's then able to look at the whole world in a very different way. Because he's not looking at the world saying, how is this world going to fulfill me? How is this world going to give me what I need? But instead, he says, no, I have everything I need because I'm with God. And so the world then is just this big, beautiful gift that God has given. And he looks out on the world and sees it all as beautiful, because it's something that he gets to simply enjoy and not seek his own satisfaction from. There's a wonderful quote when he looks at kind of how he sees the world. Here's what he says. He says, I don't know how one can walk by a tree and not be happy at the sight of it. I mean, think about how many trees we walk by every day, and we don't even think about it. But Mishkin looks at the world and says, God made all of this. This is a gift for me. So how can you walk by a tree and it not put a smile on your face? Or he says, and how can one talk to a man and not be happy in loving him? Oh, it's only that I'm not able to express it, what beautiful things there are at every step, that even the most hopeless man must feel to be beautiful. I mean, look at a child. Look at God's sunrise. Look at the grass, how it grows. Look at the eyes that gaze at you and love you. Yes, Mishkin was able to see beauty in all things. He said, look at the laughter of a child. See and notice even how the green grass grows, and let that all remind you that this is a gift from God, and that the beauty of the world is so immense that you can't even walk by a tree without smiling. The world, Mishkin realized, and I think the woman at the well realized, will never permanently satisfy us. We can enjoy it, but we enjoy it temporarily. The source that we need to fulfill our deepest longings is the living water that comes from Christ. It is that relationship with our Creator. That is a well that will never run dry. That will be an eternally satisfying reality. Jesus says, everyone who drinks this water, pointing to the well, will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks from the water that Christ gives, they will never thirst again. Yes, spiritual contentment, it comes from really knowing God. And that leads to then true spiritual contentment. And so as we look at this encounter and say, what do we learn from this? What do we learn from this encounter with Jesus and this woman at the well? Well, what I learn is that the woman travels to the well to fulfill her physical needs, her physical thirst. But instead, what she finds out is an opportunity at that well to fulfill her spiritual needs, her spiritual thirst. And we are given that same opportunity. Yeah, remember how we started this whole sermon. Many things promise fulfillment, but only one thing actually satisfies. This encounter encourages us to stop looking for fulfillment from things that were never meant to permanently fulfill us. But instead, I would encourage you to identify those areas of your life that make you feel most alive. That the work that you engage in that makes you feel like, yes, this is why I was created. This is meaningful work. This gives me purpose. Because my guess is that sort of work is the work that God is working through you to accomplish. Much like those Mexico mission trips, when you're physically exhausted but spiritually alive, identify those moments in yourself. Because I bet those are moments where you are drawing from the well of living water, where Christ is working through you and you feel it. And then your relationship with the world is not like, what do I need, but what can I give? Because it's all just so beautiful. And so next time you see a tree, maybe this can be your challenge today. Next time you see a tree or the laughter of a child, simply be astounded at the beauty of this world and recognize that this is all something God made for you. Yes, that's the living water that we can draw from together.
If you would like more information about Unity Presbyterian Church, please visit our website at www.unitypres.org or visit us on Facebook. This is the Unity Presbyterian Church Podcast. Have a great week.